Welcome to the Vince Del Monte Podcast Show, where each week we bring you the raw and real experiences, lessons, and timeless principles every man needs to master the 5 M's of manhood. By sharing conversations with the world's most successful people pursuing the 5 M's, you'll build muscle faster, achieve a winner's mindset, increase your money, dominate your mission, and go the distance with your marriage. My name is Vince Del Monte, entrepreneur, author, pro fitness model, and father. And I've helped tens of thousands of men transform their bodies and lives through muscle, entrepreneurship, and personal development. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Now let's begin. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vince Del Monte Podcast Show. We got a really cool guest here, longtime friend, and we're going to be venturing into some subject matter we haven't covered in a little while. All the fun stuff here today. We're going to be talking about pornography. And we're going to talk about more so than just that, but really the steps it takes to live what we would call a pure life, a life that would be one of wholeness, one of much more fulfillment, I would say. And bringing on a friend here who's gone through a number of, I guess you could say, pivots in his journey, in his career. I've known this individual for quite a while now. I've watched him really excel in his athletics and bodybuilding and with his career as an online fitness coach and a muscle building coach. And he's going to tell us his story today and how he's now made a pivot to helping men deal with probably one of the most addictive vices that can really get a strong hold on your life and create a life of secrecy and shame, and that can take a while to heal from depending on how deep you go down this hole. So we're going to have some real talk today. If you're a guy and whether this area of your life is one that you feel like you got a grasp on, or maybe one that you feel there was less going on in, or one that you feel is totally consuming you and that is running your life, I think we're going to have a lot of hope in this message here and try to get a good understanding of this problem. And we're going to learn through our guest's story and from his experiences and from the results that he's getting with his students in this realm. So with all that said, Frank Rich, welcome to the show, bro.
Hey, Vince. It's great to be here, man. Extremely honored to be on the show today. Real quick, I just want to share something. You mentioned it's a conversation you haven't had in a while. And I think today definitely has a special, anytime I get to talk about this, there's a special place in my heart, but I think even more so today. So I'll just share with you in preparation for today. I went back and listened to your episode with Michael John Cusick, which was one of your very early episodes. And that was really, I know we'll get into some of my story here a little bit. That conversation was really the catalyst, or one of many catalysts, for me to turn my life around. And that book is a must read for every student and client that I work with. So with that in mind, I'm extremely, you know, honored and grateful to be able to be on here today and have this conversation, because I think it's one that's definitely needed.
We're going to dive in all the good stuff. But first, Frank, why don't you just quickly share with us who you are, where you grew up, and just share us a bit about your story leading up to what you do now.
Yeah, Frank Rich, online entrepreneur, former bodybuilder. I think I always kind of start there. You mentioned a little bit in the bio that we met in kind of the muscle building space. Yeah, I grew up right here in Tampa, 40, just a half hour from where you're sitting right now. And I think growing up, there were probably early signs of maybe addictive personality. I understand a little bit more now how the brain works, but from a very young age, I began to dabble in different substances and pleasures of life. With all that leading me into my 20s, I'll try to make this as short as possible to get to your questions here. From a young age, like, I struggled with substance abuse. I struggled with alcohol, drugs. So it was something that was really a part of my family. And looking back, like, the signs were definitely there with my dad and some of his own issues and uncles and other men in my family. Even something as extreme as suicide has played a significant role in my family's life. So I think a lot of my early years, I was under this mindset that this was just how I was, like, that maybe my family's a little bit more broken than others. And these were just things I was going to have to deal with. All that in mind, I think keeping it to the theme of today's conversation, I was introduced, like most men of our age, introduced to pornography at a very, very young age. I think today it's obviously a lot more severe and extreme with iPhones and just the internet streaming, kids having access to this. I think early exposure somewhere between 8 to 10 years old. For me, it was even younger than that, but it wasn't the internet stuff. So I'm 37. So this is going back pre-internet days. My first exposure was finding my dad's Hustler magazine And it was just fascinating from the first time seeing it. Like I'm sure you can relate to this, and most men can. Yeah. The first time you see it, you're like, oh my God, what is this? I don't know how to process it. It feels good, but it feels bad at the same time. So that was the beginning of a 30-year kind of struggle with this. So just fast forwarding to dial-up internet within days of having AOL, like I found it online, getting in chat rooms, sharing pictures and whatnot. And then in my early 20s, I was working for a T-Mobile provider. And we were one of the first people to get access to the Blackberries, which gave you internet on your phone. One of the first times you could really go to any site. And that began another 15-year struggle with it, literally having it 24 hours a day in my pocket. Now, I wasn't aware of the real severity at the time. Obviously, the conversation that we're having isn't one that a lot of people were having back 10, 15 years ago. At that time, I still assumed that viewing porn was something that every guy did. It was just a part of regular male life. So I never really had a second thought about it. It was probably somewhere in my late 20s that I began to realize that, hey, I probably had more of a problem with it than most people. Sneaking off in public places, excusing myself from social gatherings just to get a quick release, almost like a drug addict like needs a hit of his drug to feel normal. That's where I was. At this time, you mentioned doing bodybuilding. I've been in the entrepreneurship space since 2012, 2013. Had a successful online business buying and selling tickets as a reseller. Did a couple million dollars in a few years with that. So a lot of the signs from where it was impacting me negatively weren't really there. I was having success with my physique. I was having success in business. I was having a little bit of success financially. I was having success in relationships. So it was hard for me to, at the time, look back as like, this is something that was really holding me back. It wasn't until probably you and I met, which would have been 2017, that it really began to show up more in my personal life. I had mentioned I'd had some issues with anxiety, depression, and those feelings. Those got really severe in 2017 and 2018. And just keep this, you know, as short as possible. It was a series of events, and really joining your mastermind was a big eye opener for me, because I got exposed to some very influential men that I still look at as friends, mentors, models in life. Many of them, the people listening to this will know, yourself, your dad included, the team at Critical Bench has been very instrumental in my life. And it was really the acceptance of a lot of these men of me into their life that I began to look at my own life. I think we'll get into faith a little bit here today as well. I didn't grow up in a religious home. There was no real talk of faith or spirituality or Jesus or any of that sort. I always avoided the conversation. What do you believe? Is it this or that? I don't really have any thoughts around that. And then in 2018, getting in these circles, being around these influential men, I began to really look deeper in my own life and realizing that there was a lot of things that I was doing. There's a lot of things that I was participating in that were ultimately holding me back and were probably leading to a lot of the things that I was feeling and experiencing. So with that in mind, to bring it home here and then maybe let you ask some questions. I was saved on October 22nd, 2018. I accepted Jesus into my life. And that kind of began this journey that I've been on, really unpacking, cleaning up my life, trying to, you know, live a pure life, for lack of a better word. So a few months go by, and then February 14th of 2019, just out of the whim, I was having a conversation with somebody after listening to your podcast with Michael John Cusack and after reading Surfing for God. Somebody else just began to open up. Just the two of us were having a conversation, and he just started to share his struggle with porn. And at that time, I realized, like, hey, this is your opportunity to really make a change. So I made a vow to him, his name is Zach, that day I would change my life forever and I would never look back. I needed a couple things from him. I needed some accountability. I needed some follow-up, but that was it. February 14th, Valentine's Day of 2019, I decided after 20 years that I was going to end it once and for all. There's a lot more involved, going home, ripping a computer apart, admitting it to the girl that I was with at the time, that this was something that she needed to know about, throwing the computer in the garbage. 2 days later, punching a hole in the wall, breaking my fist, being told I couldn't train for 6 months, which for me was a huge blow to my ego, and my identity was wrapped up in bodybuilding. Yeah, now these last 2 years have really been about putting my story and my message out into the world. I launched a podcast July of that year called The Superhuman Life, just as a way to share my story. So much had happened in a short window for me that I thought that other people needed to hear this. So launched the podcast just as a way to put this mission out in the world. 6 months later, I'm getting blown up. I'm getting requests for coaching. I was doing some fitness coaching. I was also working for a mutual friend of ours, helping build his marketing agency that was consuming a lot of my time back then. But I had a calling, and I had a pull on my heart that there were men in the world that needed me. So after attending your event in late January here in Clearwater, I decided to launch a coaching program. And now we're just a little over a year into that. We've had close to 1,000 guys come through various programs and things that we had. I've had, you know, the great honor and pleasure to work directly and one-on-one with over 50 of them. Many of them are having life-transforming results in a short window of time. So, yeah, I know that there was a lot there that I threw at the wall.
Yeah, it's all good.
We can feel free to unpack any of that you want.
Yeah, let's do that for sure. So let's talk about the men. You said something interesting, that it was the first time that you were around a group of men that accepted you. What did that feel like, and how did that influence you? Can you pinpoint what was that about that was impacting?
Yeah, I think every young boy has this ideal, this dream of what he wants his life to be. I'm sure, Vince, you can probably go back to the age of Gianluca right now, and you can probably think about what were you envisioning your life to be. And most men will say it's a successful job, career that can be defined in each own personal terms. But most men are going to lean towards, I want to be leading something. I want to be the head of a household. I want to be a father. I want to have influence. I want to leave a legacy. And that was the same for me from a very young age. Girls will say it's the white picket fence, but I think the guy just wants a secure household, one that he's at the head of, and they come to him for safety and security. So when I'm growing up in, I wouldn't say it's a broken home, and I don't want anything I share here to sound like I'm going against my parents, because I love both of my parents. My mom's one of the closest people to me, but there wasn't a real strong family. My parents had their own issues individually and collectively, and a lot of that was passed down to us. So I probably didn't have the greatest model and example of what a father figure was. Not that my dad didn't love us. I think he just struggled with showing it, and he let his own challenges with my mom get in the way of us. And that was in our house. And then, like I shared, even the other men in my family all had their own substance abuse issues, all had their own legal issues. So as I was growing up, these were the men that I saw as adults. So I had this ideal vision in my mind of what I wanted and what I thought the world was supposed to be. But then what I was living through was the complete opposite. And I think as a young boy, you don't understand how people's actions lead them down certain paths, and that we're all responsible for our own lives. So like I said at the beginning, I think for a long time, I just struggled with, there's something different about my family. Maybe we weren't meant for all this success. Maybe we weren't meant for all this happiness. And it's not that I didn't have friends and I didn't have social life in my teens and 20s. I was very popular. I had a lot of friends, but they were the friends that were around when they could get something from you. And I was the same way. I used people to get what I wanted out of them. And I think when I got connected with you, and when I saw from the first event in Toronto, when I saw you bring your dad up, a pastor, just to speak into the heart of the people in the room, nothing about business, just sharing his passion with the group, it really opened my eyes to wow, there's just some amazing people. And it's not always business money. I've heard you talk a lot about your dad's influence on you, how they've always just lived this service-centered life. And then, yeah, the men here, Mike, Chris, Dan Long, all these guys over at Critical Bench, that at the time, the only thing they knew about me was that I was a student of Vince Del Monte. I was joining his coaching program. They didn't know anything about my background. They didn't know anything about my personal life. And they said, hey, just join us every week. Join us every week for a workout. And that workout led to join us every week for workout and lunch. And then join us every week for workout and lunch said, join us on Saturday for Saturday night out with the guys. And then join us on a Sunday to meet our families. And it's these guys know absolutely nothing about me, other than what I'm telling them on Thursdays, yet they're welcoming me with open arms every single day. And it sounds odd to say this, the love that was shared in a gym changed my life. I went there to build my muscles, and I built my heart. And I think one of the biggest things that I've tried to take into my own life is something that I've learned from all of them. As Christians or as believers, like, we're not called to point our finger at people and tell anybody you're doing anything wrong or this is the right way that you need to be doing it. All we're called to do is show up differently in the world, to the point where when somebody sees us, they ask why. And I think that was for me. It's like, I began to spend time with all these men who all had their own issues that they were open and transparent about, but they all lived and shined with a different light. And when I stepped back, all of them, they're all different and unique in their own way. But the one unifying piece about them all was their love for God and love for each other. And that really spoke to me. So I think that was it more than anything.
Do you think, Frank, that I wanted to ask you this next, and it's almost like it's tying right together. Do you feel like porn was filling a void that was something that was giving you a sense of acceptance, a sense of fulfillment, that you were really surfing, surfing for God, you're searching for friendships, accepting friendships, that maybe that was filling in its place? And that's why it was so maybe bright, if you will, because it all of a sudden was brighter than something that was appearing bright before.
Oh, without a doubt, it was filling a void, as was bodybuilding for me. Growing up, I struggled with insecurities, image issues, being slightly overweight, like from a very young age. I was uncomfortable taking my shirt off when I was 12, 13 years old outside at the pool. So that drove my behavior in the gym, but that also drove, like, socially, still to this day, I identify myself as an introvert. You put me one-on-one in an environment like this, I can't shut up. You put me in a room with 100 people, I'm the guy sitting in the corner all by himself. So there definitely was something there that I was running to fill a void. And like I said, there wasn't no love in the home. It just wasn't really directed in the right way. So I think I found a sense of, I don't want to say love because that's not the right word, but yeah, 100% porn was filling a void in my life in multiple ways.
So it fills a void in many ways. Just like, I know you've gone really into extensive research on understanding this, the wiring, the neurology, and all the stages of how these habits become almost addictions and addictions themselves. How does it have such a strong grip? And it seems like you don't want to do it, but you keep doing it. What have you learned now looking back? How does this have such a strong grip? And why is it so hard to break the more you feed it? What have you learned that even, I think it's really important to this question, because like we brought up the term shame, and starting to feel like you're the only one. But I think it's really important to understand like how this stuff works so that you can almost separate yourself a bit from it, to just realize like you've been played, and to realize that if you feed this stuff, it does intensify and it does get a grasp, and it feels like it is something that's almost unhopeful to break out of. It seems like this grip can be like crushing. So what have you learned about like how this stuff is so gripping?
Yeah. And I think that's a two-part answer. I think we have to understand, and I work with men, and it's not that women don't struggle with this, but men are unique and different in their own way. And that's where I've, you know, dedicated my work is on coaching and helping men. I think we need to understand the wiring of the male brain. So there's a great book, Wired for Intimacy, by William Struthers. And he talks about the differences in the male and female brain. God created the male brain to be visually stimulated. That's why women are beautiful. Let's call it what it is. And beauty is something that is truly unique, because what's the saying? Like, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So we all have our own kind of definition of beauty, but there's something truly transcendent about it, because you can't really quantify it. So when you understand that the visual stimulation, the visual arousal of the male brain is part of what makes us men. So we have to understand that we are wired to be visually stimulated. Now, when we look at internet streaming pornography, and I think a lot of the work and a lot of what I try to talk about is the internet streaming pornography, not the Playboys of our generation, not even going back thousands of years, you can find pornographic images, drawings in caves. I want to address it in answering your question from internet streaming pornography, this unlimited, unfiltered, hardcore, extreme graphic material that we have at our fingertips 24 hours a day. neuroscientifically. So in the neuroscience world, this internet streaming pornography is what's known as a supernormal stimulus. So we take the male visually stimulated brain and we provide it with a supernormal stimulus. Supernormal stimulus is something that you cannot get from the natural world. It's nothing outside of like hardcore drugs. So cocaine, heroin, these are the only two things or the only other things that are going to stimulate the brain in the same way that internet streaming pornography does. So what this means is from the first second exposure, you've now changed the baseline of your brain. You've changed how your brain is stimulated. So how does this lead to addiction? Well, our brain is set with a reward center. We have dopamine, all these neurotransmitters, neuromodulators that are set to release at certain points throughout the day when we're in pursuit of things. If we hijack that with a supernormal stimulus, that means that we're not going to get those same senses or those same feeling. So this leads to the addictive traits where I got to seek out more porn. I got to go look at more hardcore material. I got to go into areas that I'm not even morally okay with just to get that same level of stimulus. Just look at a drug addict, somebody that is struggling with sticking a needle in their arm. They didn't start there. Now, this is why there's things, you know, called gateway drugs. Or an alcoholic, if he's drinking, you know, a liter of whiskey every night, he didn't start there. He started with something a little bit less. And then because his brain is wired to not respond in the same way, he's going to need keep giving it more and more. So if we understand the male brain is visually aroused, visually stimulated through beauty, but then we're going to overstimulate it with beauty, then yeah, it's going to get hijacked.
How do you know you're addicted? How do you know that you've hit what does the line look like when I know this is normal? Now, to be honest, Vince, you've got a problem. What are the signs?
Yeah, such a difficult question, because if he asked me, is it okay to ever look at it? Is it okay to ever, if your goal is to live a high performance life, and we know that viewing it 1 to 2 times alters your brain in a negative way. But if to know that you're addicted, try to stop. And if you can't, right, which 95% of men that try to stop can't.
I'm going to put myself out there. I want to just stay on the same conversation, but so let me paint a picture here. Since you've been pretty vulnerable yourself, I'll throw one up there for the audience too. So I've always found myself most susceptible to porn after I get in a fight with my wife. Mm-hmm. And she's going upstairs and I'm going downstairs. We're not sleeping. It's typically like on a date night when it was supposed to be a happy night. So for me, I found that it's almost like it's an FU.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'll go downstairs and take care of myself then, depending on how frequently the fights are. But that's like my trigger. Rarely will I go downstairs after a fight on date night and just go to bed. So my retaliation, I don't know if it's retaliation or if it's my way of like handling rejection, maybe a bit of both. I don't need you. Fine. You don't need me. I don't need you. And then there's also a component of I don't feel loved. I feel rejected. So this is how I'm going to go get my satisfaction. If let's say just hype, what's happening in those type of contexts, but those contexts are happening maybe once, you know, every few months, maybe on a bad streak, maybe twice a month kind of thing. How would you assess that? Like just because is that a problem? Is that something the root issue is that the intimacy needs to be improved in our relationship, but then the rest of the time, it's not really showing up. How would you assess that? Is that something that you need to look into, or is that, you know what, that's just your default? Because I want to speak to, I'm sure I'm not the only person that can relate to this, but I think it's really important because you're opening the door for something else. And I believe in prevention and getting on top of something before it becomes a real problem. What are your insights on when guys are utilizing porn in kind of those type of situations? And what would be some input on how to, you know, get a hold of that? Easy question for you.
Yeah. And I'm just going to speak openly and not really care if I offend anybody. I would say you're weak. would say, really, like, your response to an interaction with your wife, and maybe this is why I'm not a marriage counselor, because this probably wouldn't go over too well in a therapeutic environment. Your response is F you, and I'm going to go do this to get back at you. Let me know how that behavior plays out in the next 10 years if you continue down that path. And I think what you're saying is, if you say F you now, here in this moment with this behavior, you say F you now a month down the road when the same thing happens, how is that F you going to compound over time? Like, we know that things don't stay the same. Actions compound either in a positive way or in a negative way. So if you live and operate from a place where your wife gets mad at you and you say F you, I'm going to get back at you with looking at porn, I would just be very cautious about where that's going to potentially lead in the future. I think
selfish. No, you're right. You're spot on. I think you nailed it. It is a selfish response. It's very selfish. It's not like be a man, because there has been times where I go down and I'm like, wait a second. I have an opportunity right now to go create an intimate connection and go up and say, I'm sorry, I screwed up. Will you forgive me? You want to talk this out? And then we can, then those turn out to be great nights, you know, or the next night, or sometimes I'm still in the.
You teach ownership in your coaching. Like, you're responsible for every action in your business. You're responsible for every outcome, whether you're running a one person team or a team of 50, like, you as the owner, you as the CEO are responsible for everybody's actions. So here in a moment like this, just use your own coaching. Like, where was Vince responsible in his actions to lead to this debacle?
No, I love this, because you're literally calling out the victim mindset. Like, when, just let's run through that whole situation again. F you, I'm going downstairs, take that, I don't need you, I'll retaliate this way. That's completely being a victim. And what I don't, why is, I guess it really is like not seeing that there's an opportunity here to grow closer to your partner and to say, hey, I value you more than my own needs. I've hurt you. How can we come back together and make this right? And then that experience is going to be far more fulfilling than anything you watch on any stream. And I think you have to almost stop yourself. Maybe just speak to the opportunity in the moment where, like, you're feeling the tension, you're feeling the stress. You're like, I'm stressed out. I had a long day. I've got the house to myself. I got to go downstairs. Like, I deserve a little, I worked hard this week. You got all these rationalizations. There's a moment right there. There's all these lies coming to you at every angle. And it's like the same situation every single time. Talk to us about some things that you would do, Frank, to, like, in that moment, do you go work out? Do you go run around? What are some tactical things? Do you just feel it? Like, what do you do in the moment where the intensity of the temptation, the urge, the crave just feels like it's overwhelming and you're just like, you don't know anything else but to do what you've always done in the past?
Yeah, that's great. And I think it goes right in line with one of your mentors, like Bedros Koulian. How you do one thing is how you do everything. So if your reaction to a stressful situation, to a stressful work week, like you said, like, I've had a really long work week, like, I deserve this because I've been overly stressed. If your reaction in that moment of dealing with stress is to go look at colored pixels and play with yourself, then think about how that's going to play itself out in other situations. Yeah, this is a great question. I'm glad we're addressing it the way that we are. So what are some real practical things to do in that moment? I guess it's going to depend upon where the guy is at in his journey. If he's working with me and this is the first time or first handful of times we're going through this, it's an opportunity to pull our journal out and let's get clear on why are we doing this? Why are we running from the situation that we're faced with right now to go seek this out? Is this the manifestation of things in our past that we're not worked through yet that we still need to go back and work through? Is it just this has always been our way that we avoid conflict and situations? So get clear, and whether it's with a journal or just whether it's with your own thoughts, just get clear on why you're running from the behavior and why you're seeking this out. Now, in terms of like what you can do outside of that, quick physiological.
Real quick on that, sorry, Frank, but are you talking about adding some language to what you're feeling? Like, I'm feeling rejected or I'm feeling lonely. So start adding specific language to get real clear on when these craves and urges come.
Yes. I'm feeling this way. And why am I feeling this way? Is this you know, due to other unprocessed issues, or I just don't know how to deal when I don't get my way because I'm a child and I haven't grown up yet. So yeah, adding language to the emotions. So well said there. And then secondly, speaking to probably a very dominant fitness audience, everybody knows how to do a physiological state change. So you could tap into some breathing right then and there. Like when you're triggered, when you're feeling that I need this release right now, that is a sense of autonomic arousal. So you need to bring that nervous system back down. So Wim Hof breathing, box breathing, four in, four out type of things, all these can actually work in the moment. Cold showers, probably not the best real-time tool because it requires like an added setup. I'd say get outside, go for a 10-minute walk by yourself. Don't go for a 10-minute walk on social media. Don't go for a 10-minute walk listening to a podcast. Go for a 10-minute walk outside, breathing in the fresh air, thinking about your thoughts again. Once again, like if we're not able to handle the situation, if we're not equipped with the right tools in the moment, because this is, you even said it, even for me, it was running from something. It was using pornography as a crutch in another area. You know, I have a great friend, Drew Boa, who runs another ministry called Husband Material. He talks about porn as a pacifier. It's something that boys use to mask their feelings. And then boys that don't learn how to, you know, handle their emotions grow into men that still need a pacifier. So if we just need to get clear on why we're feeling this way and why do we feel we deserve something for our behavior.
Yeah, we're going to be, we're jumping around here, but all these questions are just racing in now. I'm thinking, so what's the cost here? I'm trying to think of what some guys might be thinking. They're like, Frank, I do it like once every few months or just once a week kind of thing. It's not a big deal. What's the cost and the consequence every time you say yes to their urge to giving in? What are you saying no to? Maybe in the short term, but also what are you seeing now costing people in the long term that you're like, man, this isn't going to just unravel overnight. Like, where can this go? Because I feel like a lot of guys, like, where is the negative impact? Like, paint a picture of the negative waterfall so you can start to see this isn't just once. This is what's actually compounding over time. This is where you're going if you keep this up. Because I think that's, you just painted a great picture. Yeah, eventually in the marriage, the wife's just going to have enough and say enough is enough. Like, my husband he's not fighting for me. My husband is a coward. He goes down to the basement every single time we get into an argument and he can't fight for me. He's not willing to fight for my heart. That's heading to divorce.
Yeah.
We could translate that into a very expensive divorce lawyer, but paint some more pictures for me. Cause I think this is like a lot of people might be downplaying this or want to just say, or they might be listening to a lie that you got this, man. You don't need this podcast. You don't need this coaching. You don't need this support. You got this, man. Yeah, paint some negative waterfalls for us.
Yeah, no, I'll just share my own, once again, my own personal, you know, struggles with this. I was a 32, 33-year-old competitive bodybuilder, very healthy, like fitness modeling, physical pinnacle that many people would never even dream to get to. And I couldn't get an erection without a blue pill. So when we understand, once again, just bringing it back all the way to what I talked about with it hijacking our brain.
Frank, so I don't need to cut you off. I just don't want to make sure I understand this. Sorry. This is because not natural stimulus couldn't compensate. You couldn't match the super physiological
or
stimulus on the screens.
Yeah. So there's a terminology known as PIED, porn-induced erectile dysfunction. We're seeing in the last decade plus, we've seen just a massive rise in erectile dysfunction in men in their early 20s. Previously, like men didn't struggle with erectile dysfunction until they were in the late 30s, 40s. Typically, when testosterone starts to decline, you just see some of the wear and tear of a life. They maybe not lived most optimally and most healthy. What you end up doing is over time, like everything that we do, like I always like to say, our brain is like this filtration system from the outside world. So everything from the outside before something happens inside has to go through our brain. So if we're going to get an erection by looking at a vision, by looking at a woman, your wife, or pornography, that needs to go through the eyes, through the brain, and then it connects to the erection. And that's not the most scientifically articulated way to say that, but I think everybody understood what I was saying. So when you're training yourself, and I've literally heard stories of men that cannot get an erection without their hands on a keyboard. So you're training yourself that this is where you get aroused. Huh. And what they've shown in brain scans is when you watch porn the part of your brain that is activated is not the same part that's activated in a real intimate relationship. So you have a center in your brain that responds to objects. And when you watch and view pornography, that part is what lights up. When you're in an intimate relationship, the part that is associated with connection is what's firing. So you're literally training your brain to no longer even associate the human physical form with actual connection. You're training it to be an object. But yeah, it can lead to erectile dysfunction at a very young age. I've been through it. I talked about the depression and anxiety. It just takes over the prefrontal cortex. Like it literally hijacks the part of your brain that makes you a human. So you struggle, executive function, the ability to tap into flow. This is why I was excited to have this conversation with you, speaking to coaches and entrepreneurships. If you're right. finding yourself unable to focus throughout the day, but you're watching pornography for an hour every night, let's start to connect some dots here. So literally it can prevent you from being able to tap into a flow state. It can prevent you from really getting restful sleep, especially if you're watching it late at night. So these are all negative side effects. One thing I like to address as well, because I have a lot of connections in the human trafficking space. I think it's one of the darkest forms of evil in the world. What leads men to the point where they need to buy sex slaves, to where they need to buy trafficking victims? And I'm not trying to say if you watch porn, you're gonna end up buying a child for sex, but every time that one of them has been arrested, and Tim Ballard, the founder of Operation Underground Railroad, shares this. Every time he's gotten a chance to interrogate somebody, he asks them the question, how did you get here? How did it lead to the point where you needed to buy a child for sex? And every single one of them without fail will say, well, it started with my dad's pornography. It started the first time I saw Playboy. Hijacks the brain. I need more hardcore porn. I need to go into different genres. I need to look at BDSM. Then the BDSM, and then the hardcore porn doesn't even work. So Michael John Cusack talked about in Surfing for God, escorts and massage parlors and prostitutes. So you now start paying people consenting for sex, and then they can't do the things that you need to do because you've hijacked what your brain gets pleasure from. So then you got to get to the point where I have to buy somebody that's not even going to consent. They're just going to do whatever I want. That's like the dark of where it can lead to. Like I said, I don't want to say by looking at porn, you're going to end up overseas buying a sex slave, but I think it's important to paint that picture, because we can say no to drugs. We can say no to crack because we can visualize the homeless person sleeping on the sidewalk, that guy's probably got a drug problem, or we've seen somebody in rehab struggling with this. We don't see a lot of what the negative outcome of porn is. And that's where I try to shine some light on things.
Good. We're talking about it. I mean, having that awareness, because I bet everybody listening could admit to consuming something that they would have never admitted to ever saying, I need to, or want to, or I can't believe I'm watching this right now.
Yeah. And that in of itself, sorry to cut you off, that causes like a level of cognitive dissonance. When you're going somewhere to see something, to get visually aroused or get stimulated, yet if you were put in that situation in real life, morally, you wouldn't be comfortable with it. So you start having this internal fight inside of you is, oh, I'm seeking this out because it makes my brain feel good, but it's like eating away my heart. You literally are having this battle taking place inside of you.
Frank, speak to, you know, I'm a married man. I can tell you, when I'm most like effective is when I'm so clear on my vision. And at the end of the day, I'm falling asleep with my kids, you know, at 8:30. I'm going to bed earlier. I'm not up late. My relationship with my wife is solid. I'm getting all my needs met from her. Heck, it's great. I even joked around, even if I ever do need to release, I'm thinking about her. I'm like, she's okay. That's acceptable. But that's when I feel like that's when I'm in the best spot. And talk to the men out there, the single guys out there. What kind of boundaries have you put in your life? Where are you seeking out accountability? Share some of the setups you've got with phones and computers. Like, this is a battle. This is a war. And first you have to decide, do you want to fight? In my strong opinion, strong belief and conviction, this is a fight that you must fight. And this isn't just one that you need to fight, but this is a fight you need to win. And talk to us about how to win. Small wins, big wins. How can I start gaining some wins as a single guy? And maybe they'll carry over into the married guy too, but let's speak to those guys first.
Yeah.
How do I start winning?
Yeah, Great question. And once again, I hate to share all my personal anecdotes here, but when I made this decision, you knew Stephanie or know Stephanie, we were 2.5 years into a relationship and we were beginning to have conversations, future, this, that. And like I said, I've always wanted to be a dad. I think it's one of the most important roles that men have. But I knew then if we were going to move forward, if we were going to pursue that life, like she needed to know, like I wasn't comfortable calling myself.
How did you do that? You have to save that one. How did you tell her? I'm like, well, we'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So she knew because I was the boyfriend that would like, hey, do you want to watch porn kind of thing? Just to like press buttons to see how far I could go. That's how I would test limits. So it was no secret between her that I watched it. What she didn't know is that it was like a severe addiction. So I had a secret laptop. I had a laptop that stayed in the closet and it only came out when she was gone. So the morning that I was ready to tell her, which was February 15th, I just got up and I was like, this is the time. It's now or never. And I had already admitted, I'd already confessed to somebody else that I was going to do this. So I had to follow through just on my own promise to somebody else. So I literally walked into the room where she was getting ready in the morning. And I said, hey, I have to tell you something. I'm holding a laptop like under my arm. She's like, what is the laptop for? I just shared with her. I was like, I know you've known that I've watched porn. I've tried to get you to do it with me before. I don't think you understand how severe it really is. I was so ready at that point. Like I began to study some of the videos. I had obviously heard your conversation with Michael. I'd read his book. I'd, you know, watched Gary Wilson's Your Brain on Porn TEDx. I was ready because I knew that it was holding me back. So there wasn't a lot of resistance internally with me. So I just shared with it. And I went into it knowing that she's either going to run out the door and never look back, or she's going to accept it. And we're going to be able to work through this. At the time she accepted it, we never really worked through all the things, but that's a different story. But yeah, for me, I knew like I had to. And then you asked about single guys. So I'll just share a big part of me fully submitting and surrendering my life to Christ was decide to go abstinent, no sex until marriage. Dumbest decision I ever made because I was still living with a female. We had been sexually active, made this choice, stayed living together, not sexually active. So this, I don't recommend this to anybody because it's just, it made it so hard. Like a beautiful woman sleeping next bed to her. So that's not a great piece of advice for anybody. Don't do that. But I think if you're single, depending on where you're at in your life, what stage are you in? Like you kind of got to have a plan and vision. Like what type of man do you want to be? Like go back to that, what I shared at the beginning, like that feeling that every young boy has of what the ideal for his life is. Like in that vision of your life, what does the family dynamic look like? And when you get clear on that, how would she, the wife, look at your behavior today? Would she accept you today? Here's another great question. If you had a daughter, would you want your daughter to date you?
Wow.
And I think that can maybe help men gain some clarity. I'm not here to preach to anybody and tell them living a life of abstinence is the path that they need to go, that they need to go without sex. It's a choice that I've made. It's been very difficult here 2+ years. But I've made the commitment and I feel that this is what's best for me and my future wife.
Yeah. And I would, obviously I wasn't a virgin when I got married. So it's easy to preach here from where I'm sitting now, but I think you do. I love what you said. You have to have a vision for your life. I always wanted to be able to tell my kids like, hey, your daddy waited. Fortunately, I won't be able to say that. I was an ideal I had. And I believe that God can restore and he'll use as a sovereign God. So he'll make, he'll make every story whole. But at the same time, like if you're in a position right now listening where maybe you want to have a vision where one day you sit down with your son or your daughter and you say, I waited for your mommy or et cetera. That's a pretty powerful vision to help you pull through tempting situations. And I always look back and if you think about who is the designer of sex, like it's God. So he obviously knows how it best functions. It's like going up to a guy that built a bike and say, hey, you should have built the bike differently. What are you talking about? I'm the creator. I know how this bike is supposed to be designed and how it runs best. How are you disagreeing with the guy that created the thing in the first place? Mm-hmm. You'd be crazy to argue with the designer. We can, you know, talk about that, but I think there is a lot of, I think people can relate to trusting the designer for how the design was meant to function optimally. And keyword being optimally.
Yeah. And I love that. And anybody listening that's a believer or identifies as a Christian, if you believe that we were, you know, created in God's image, for me, what that means is God created everything. We were created in his image. That means we were created to create. And you think about what's the ultimate creation? It's when two human beings come together for the greatest miracle known to man, which is the creation of another human being. So when you're watching porn and masturbating into a sock or napkin or towel or on yourself, if you're that miserable, what are you doing? You're literally wasting half of the equation for the greatest miracle in the world, which is the creation of a human being. If you can learn to harness that, and I don't want to sound too woo-woo here, but I do believe in sex transmutation. I believe that we can harness that creative power and put it into creating other things in the world, creating a business, launching a podcast, all the things that as entrepreneurs, you're trying to do. As an entrepreneur, you are a creator.
Right.
Your job is to create for the world. So if you're struggling to create content because you're wasting your creative juice every night at the end of the day, because you're too stressed to deal with it, begin to look at, okay, if I can learn to harness this, create the life that I want, create all the things that I was put on this earth to do. Yeah. Don't you think that God is going to bless you in the right way with the family that you've always dreamt about? At least that's what drives and motivates me.
I love that. And I think big thing that both you and I probably connected on with that book, Surfing for God. And I know it's probably influenced your coaching a lot, which I want to talk about in just a moment too, and how you specifically work with men who are ready to fight this fight that must be won, is having a bigger vision for your life. And when you do have a bigger vision and you're occupied, like you don't have time, like you don't even have emotional energy to exhaust on this. And because you're being pulled towards your purpose. And I know you do a lot of work beyond just there's the tactics of trying to avoid it. But again, maybe wrap up. So what is like the root issue when you're constantly running into this? Like, where do you see the most, let's use a business term, where do you see the most payoff with your coaching students? Like, what activities do they really start embracing in their life that really, they're not like, oh, I put the password on my phone and on my computer, I don't have access to it anymore. Now it's all better. Yeah, that stuff, I guess there's nothing wrong with it, but I know you're not going after, you're not providing those band-aids. You're treating the root issue of, the root issue is that there's something missing and you're searching for something that only something can fulfill, which is a greater purpose. What activities and actions should men be prepared to start pursuing if they're going to start working with you and to start to see a real transformation in their life?
Yeah, great question. And yeah, sometimes we'll use tools like that. We'll use the software blockers or the covenant eyes. Like you said, those are band-aids, or those are just short-term crutches and fixes. I had the saying that I've really built the entire coaching business and practice off of. It's like, in order to overcome your addiction to pornography, you must become the man that is no longer addicted to porn. Put a major emphasis on that word become. Am I an addiction recovery coach? Maybe. Am I a health and fitness coach? Probably. I really think I help men with their identity more than anything. I help them become the man that they were created to be. I guess it depends upon the season of life that the guy is in. I've worked with everybody from men in their mid to late 50s that are married with kids and grandkids to, I have an 18-year-old, you know, high school student right now that I'm coaching with. So it really depends on where they're at. I can tell you the majority of the clients that I work with are somewhere between 25 to 35, single men or men that are in relationships, not yet in a family. And where we have the greatest success is advancing them in their career. Whether it's one student I worked with in 4 months, launched two e-commerce businesses. He was a full-time working engineer, did some ministry work and service in his church. I mean, just opening up all this free time and giving him structure in his days, we put him in a position where he launched an Amazon drop shipping business and then an e-commerce Shopify store in 16 weeks. A second client that I had was an online fitness coach out of the UK, never broken $7,500 in a month. Our third month working together, he exceeded 10K. And then our fourth month, he hit a record month of almost 15K. Just helping him get clear, realizing that all this time, not just the time being wasted, but how much time was it taking him to recover mentally? How much time was it taking him to recover emotionally? How much time was it taking him to recover spiritually from all the damage he was doing? It's just getting clear. And this is a lot of what we do in the first couple of weeks. We look at the impact. We look at where's it really had a negative impact on your life. And then we work together to build a future vision, to build a vision for what you want to accomplish, because you said it. And I think any true recovery from any addiction is going to require some type of spiritual transformation. And that is, you know, when I talk about that, that's just having a deeper sense of meaning in your life, knowing that you were put here for a specific purpose and it's your job to bring that purpose to life. So once we can get clear on that, we've seen marriages reestablished, you know, getting closer to their wives. I think one of the greatest things that I'm able to do is helping guys reestablish their relationship with God and finding themselves again there. That's the greatest call that I have as a Christian, is creating disciples. So get a lot of men that have either, you know, walked away or they felt disconnected because of their behavior, are getting reconnected with Christ or with God. And then I think the business and productivity side of it. So we help them build structure. We help them build routines in their days. How do you make sure that you don't watch porn? Plan your day without porn. It sounds really simple, but I know you get it. If from the day, the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed, you know exactly what you're going to be doing. Yeah. Porn's not on the schedule. Then if you look at porn, then you're the one responsible for it. So it's structure, planning, accountability, and ownership.
How do people hold themselves? A scary question here. And I think this might be the scariest thing. If I was thinking about, I want to get some help, like, how do you hold me accountable? Are you going to start seeing everything I do? Like, how does, maybe give us an insight on how does that part work? Like, do you have access to my browser now? Like, how do guys get the accountability? You ask them questions? Do they have to fill out a report, or how does that work?
Yeah, I'm not anybody's parents. I'm not going and checking what they're doing. We work on a truthful, honest relationship. Okay. But I think, how does the guy get accountability? You'll love this one, and all the coaches can borrow this as well. And the Bible tells you where your treasures go, the heart will follow. So if you're looking for help and you're not willing to invest into the help, you're probably not going to be committed to it. Once you join a program, once you make an investment into a coach, once you pay somebody to be your accountability, now your heart is in that. So you've had a change of heart by taking that decision, by making that action. But then, yeah, I tell these guys that I can only help them if I know the honest truth. Yeah, I'm not going and checking their browser history. I'm trusting that we have an open, honest, trustworthy relationship.
I like that. Frank, is there anything you want to wrap up on? I'd love to, you know, give you the floor and let people get to know about how they can get in contact with you and what your coaching looks like in that. I've never opened up the floor for anyone to share about their services for getting help with this area. Frank, you're a longtime friend, and I know you're doing some really big changes with a lot of your students. And I think this is an amazing calling. Dude, you just came on here and just shared stuff that most people would never dare share. And I think that's part of the reason a lot of people are coming to you, because they feel safe and they're ready to have the conversation because you've started the conversation. Any final words, though, on anything that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you before we do that?
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. You know, I think this was a great, great conversation. You asked some very insightful questions, things that, you know, I maybe haven't been asked in that specific way. So I really enjoyed this. I do get the opportunity to go on a lot of these podcasts and share quite a bit. And I always love, you know, being challenged in a unique way. So I appreciate you. Like I said at the beginning, I'm so grateful and honored for this opportunity. I guess final words is, men out there, if you truly are, if you're listening to this, and assume that you're interested in living your best life, you're interested in high performance, you're interested in becoming the greatest version of yourself. Those are all the same thing, just phrased a little bit differently. I think if I was able to do anything today, hopefully it was able maybe to shine some light on the consumption of this does not align with that. So if that is what you're saying that you're trying to do, I hope I did a good enough job articulating it today, that there's no place in your life for it. And it's not to shame you, it's not to condemn you, but if you truly said that your goal is to live your greatest life, I hope I was able to provide enough information that it's damaging your brain. And yeah, if somebody is looking for help, I would say connect me on Instagram, check out our YouTube. We're doing daily videos on YouTube right now. Those are starting to gain a lot of traction. We're getting a lot of positive. Instagram is at the Superhuman Frank. And then the YouTube is Rebuild Your Life. But if you just put Frank Rich porn into any of the search algorithms, you'll find it. Like I said, daily videos. We're getting a lot of great feedback. And then I do have a free book if somebody's interested in, and it's an ebook. It's the 7-step guide to living life without porn. You know, I walk you through identifying how to get clear on the negative impact, how to build a vision and plan for your life, how to break that down into an actionable plan, how to recruit accountability, how to build discipline and willpower, and how to help belief in yourself.
Frank, where do they get that one?
That's at the7stepguide.com.
At the7stepguide.com. We'll put that all in the show notes. That's great. And Frank, thank you for sharing today, man. Dude, it's amazing what you're doing right now. And I know you're connecting with a lot of experts on the subject matter. And this is, like I said, this is a fight that I've always felt needed to be won. I don't know if I told you this when I was getting into my online business back in 2005, the three niches that I was thinking. Yeah, I've shared this story. I don't know if I've shared it publicly on my podcast, though. But I was trying to figure out three niches I was going to get into. It was either helping trainers make money or helping skinny guys build muscle or helping guys on porn get off. And that was back in my mid-20s. But my mentor told me that the triangle is passion, ravenous marketplace, and credibility. And I didn't check off. The third one in my mid-20s, I always had this vision of, I wonder if one day I'll ever be a part of helping men fight this battle. And I feel like here we are 15 years later doing a small part here with you. I hope men that are listening reach out to you, and we'll get all of his information in the show notes and just, you know, ask you what's involved with the coaching. And like you said, if this is something that's important to you, aside from the payoff, the peace in your heart and the freedom to live your life that's not shackled, if you will, to this habit that's stealing your joy and your peace and your love and your ability to love your spouse or your future spouse in a way that, you know, can only be done in a way that it was designed to be done. Yeah. What price do you put on that? Frank, I love what you're doing, man. Thanks for coming on. And I'm really excited for the men that are going to work with you. I think you should definitely add like a tagline to your name, something like no BS or no fluff, because Frank's probably going to call you weak if he finds out how you're responding. I think that's what a lot of men need, a swift kick to the nuts, if you will, because a lot of these things are winnable. These are all winnable fights, but sometimes we get comfy and cushy, and men don't call each other out in these areas. And you need to want to be called out first of all, as Frank made it very clear. Anyways, thank you so much for your story and for your experiences. And I love hearing the results that you're getting with your students. So everybody tuning in, please take a moment and pay this episode forward. Tag Frank, tag me. We'll reshare it on our social stories. At least one person, and share this with somebody, maybe a brother, maybe a friend, heck, maybe your dad, maybe anyone that would really get a lot of value and support from this podcast. And we'll talk to you all super soon. Thanks, Big Frank.
Thank you, bud.
And that's it for this episode. If you want to hang out with more serious online fitness coaches who are starting, growing, or scaling profitable online fitness businesses, then you're going to want to head on over to vincedelmonte.ca/group, where I do a free weekly training on the smartest and easiest way to build a high-ticket fitness empire in less time. This is my free Facebook group, and this is where all the deep dive, amazing, instantly implementable advice gets dropped that you're not going to want to miss. And thank you for listening to the Vince Del Monte podcast. And if you're getting value from this show, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review over on iTunes. And if you'd like to get yourself 3 free samples of the world's only all-day energy pre-workout preload, leave a review on iTunes, screenshot it, and send it to my Blue Verified account on Instagram. All you got to do is go to @VinceDelMonte, send it on over. We'll get your address and we'll ship 3 free samples to your front door to give you all day energy, just as a little token of my appreciation for supporting the show and getting the word out there. We'll see you next time.